I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello, welcome to our new podcast, The Signal
and the Noise,
that will attempt to give you a peek into the inner workings of Mint's long stories. This is Sunit.
And I am Ajay.
And we are both editors with Mint.
Welcome to this early November podcast. This is Sunit, and I have a feisty journalist as a guest today. Let me introduce Sucheta Dalal by going back to the summer of 1992. That was when I had joined Business Today magazine fresh out of journalism school. It was a good time to be young. The paint had barely dried on major economic reforms. India was churning and changing rapidly, and not all of it was peaceful. But in that sizzling summer of 92, the biggest story was the scam, the security scam that had felled Harshad Mehta, the big bull of Dalal Street. And two Bombay-based journalists, Sucheta Dalal and Debashish Basu, were on top of the story. Sucheta first broke the story in April 92 in the Times of India. Debashish was a senior editor in Business Today, and we used to wait for him to land in Delhi close to the issue closing day with yet another exclusive. What was the scam? Well, quite simply put, Mehta was illegally using the banking system to finance his stock buying. The game went on as long as the stock prices kept going up. By the time it was exposed, the banking system had been swindled of a whopping Rs 4,000 crore. All this has been brilliantly captured in a new show on streaming platform Sony Live, and it has become a runaway success. Directed by Hansal Mehta, Scam 92 is based on Sucheta and Debashish's book on the financial scandal. To discuss Harshad Mehta and more, I am delighted to welcome Sucheta Dalal, Managing Editor of Money Life magazine. Let's find out what she has to say.
Hi, Sucheta. Good to have you on board on The Signal and the Noise.
Hi, Sunit. Good to be here.
You know, it must be really feeling great to have your work documented as a successful streaming show. In fact, you know, just before speaking to you, a friend called up and said, pirated versions of Scan 92 are available. So that's really a sign of success. Why do you think the show has been such a big success?
Frankly, no idea. I think they've got a good filmmaker and he's done a brilliant job. What else can one say?
It's a good story, I guess, but it was very complicated. They have been smart enough to use only a section of it. So this story is only about Harshad Mehta, which is about 30% of our book, I guess, or even less than that. And it's a compelling story. And it was done well. They have, you know, got the right elements, explained it to the layperson. So they've got the right music, they've got the right dialogue. I mean, all credit to Hansal Mehta and the Laws team.
Right. I mean, earlier on we were talking and I've also got this feedback that many feel, you know, Harshad was the only victim of the scam, even though, of course, there were many casualties. And I think some of that credit will go to Hansal Mehta for portraying Harshad Mehta in such endearing light. What do you feel?
Yes, I tend to agree. But, you know, it's also a problem with people today, okay? They just don't want to read. Yes, it is 27 years old, and many of them who have these views weren't born at that time. And most people are very cynical about media today. So they think that, you know, a journalist can decide what the fate of someone is. Just so naive and childish. But you don't even know how to react to it because there is so much in the public domain. There was a Joint Policy Committee, those reports are there. And this, for heaven's sake, is the Google generation, right? So you would think that even as people are talking, they go on to their phones and Google and find out more about things. But nobody seems to want to do that. I don't know. I mean, nobody is an exaggeration. Lots of sensible people who are reading, who know. But there are lots of the millennials who don't care.
Right. I mean, do you think that the interest in the stock markets right now played a role in the overall fascination for this show?
Hard to say. I don't know. Maybe the fact that people are working from home and have more time. But I think it's just very well made. I mean, we may, you know, as writers, have a few quibbles about how they've changed time and place the way they want to, and, you know, characters. But at the end of the day, it is such a huge success that you can't argue with it, right? One has to say, okay, the filmmaker knew how to tell the story and he's done a brilliant job. And, you know, the response sort of seems to show it.
Okay. Any particular quibble that you feel really shouldn't have been there?
Small things will always be there. As Sameer Nair was telling me, if you watch, you know, ER or something, you would think it's such a brilliant job, but doctors probably laugh at some of the things. So, I mean, small things like, I would never call a SEBI chairman SEBI governor, right? So, small things like this will be there throughout, and nothing very serious, I would say.
Okay.
I mean, they have a reason for everything that they have done. Number of characters, what they do, how not to cause confusion in the minds of people. So if you read the book, some of those things become evident.
Right. Okay, I'm going to step back a little bit and go a little into the markets, because, you know, that's one central theme. And you know, in the past, you've argued that the Indian stock market is narrow, shallow and illiquid. And this show, of course, comes at a time when a whole new bunch of Indians are rushing into the market. Has anything really changed?
Not really. It's, you know, people are rushing in, all right, because, you know, look at the way banks are behaving and look at what you get on term deposits. And, you know, people feel that you might as well take a risk with the markets. But there's always, every few years, there's a wave of new people who come in. In fact, I've done a whole video blog on it, saying that this new bunch of people and all these who are sort of carried away with Harshad Mehta kind, I mean, they're the ones who fell for all these Anugrahas, share and stock brokers, literally a Ponzi scheme. I mean, you come there, I'll get you high returns by, you know, trading on a sure thing in the derivatives market. I wish life was so simple. If it were, I mean, people like you and me who've been writing on business and finance, we had no shortage of tips and things that people would tell us, right? We would have been, I mean, we would have been competing with Mukesh Ambani, I guess, or at least Harshad Mehta. The point is, it is not easy. It wasn't easy for him. He didn't do it straight. A lot of others don't do it straight. And there's no easy money. And there's definitely no money without spending time and effort and understanding, without putting a cap on what is it that you, where should you peg your expectations? How reasonable can they be? What length of time should you look at? What kind of investment horizon you should look at? But this bunch of people who are coming in, it's like, for them, it's a bit like gambling, you know? You're not able to go out, let me gamble on the markets. Mm.
And in many ways, nothing really has changed. And moving to scams, you know, the Harshad Mehta scam of 92 seems like the innocent days. Of course, it opened up politicians to the immense potential of the capital markets as a vehicle to amass wealth. But the scams don't seem to be stopping, right? They become smarter.
Yes. I mean, a lot of stuff is happening in derivatives trading, and it's completely opaque. And you're supposed to have this real-time monitoring that is done by SEBI. And there's nothing more opaque than that, because we don't even know whether they monitor anything. What do they find? Where is it ever disclosed? You know, as a country, we set up SEBI around the time Harshad Mehta happened, right? But you can't set up independent regulators if you don't create a system of accountability. So all over the world, they are accountable to, you know, maybe the Senate, maybe Congress. In India, they should be accountable to Parliament. And since Parliament, you know, as a whole is never going to understand this, they at least should be answerable to the Joint Parliamentary, I mean, the Parliamentary Standing Committee on Finance. But where do they ever, I mean, everything is so perfunctory. They call people, so they go on a, you know, sort of national tour, go and meet the RBI, go and meet SEBI, each of these standing committees. We never get to know what they're looking at. They want no participation from people, from investors, people like us. And even when they have deliberations, other than that press release that's put out, we don't know what they discuss or what is presented. There's no way of challenging it. We don't know how many members of that parliamentary committee even understand the basics about markets, right? So we have created a system where there is zero accountability. We have five financial regulators. None of them are accountable. I have seen that even questions asked in parliament don't get a correct reply. And the person asking the question doesn't know that the reply is not correct. So there is never a counter or there's never a comeback saying, I'm sorry, this is not correct. And those answers are sometimes like the answers you get to an RTI question, vague and, you know, off topic.
Right. And I mean, obviously, despite SEBI having many more powers when you were reporting than when you were reporting the scam story in 92, SEBI has not yet done a proper insider trading conviction, right?
Well, you know, they're doing much worse because what they're doing now is easy settlements. So every other day, there is a settlement for insider trading. And there are, you know, big fund managers and well-known names who are settling cases. I mean, if you notice, even Ravi Parsathy had an insider trading case that he settled by paying a few lakhs. And what was even more obnoxious is the money was paid by ILFS, right, not by him individually. So, you know, when I say complete lack of transparency and accountability, this is what I mean. This is another example where you take an idea from abroad, where you don't want to clog the systems, you want things to move fast. So you say, okay, you'll have a settlement. But the basic rule of those kind of settlements were that there will be charges. Those charges will be transparently put in the public domain. And by and large, the settlement that you, the money that you pay without admitting or denying any guilt is large enough that it is a little punitive. So it has to be proportional to what you're accused of. But in India, we've converted it into a joke. So you may have made a few crores and you pay a penalty of 5 lakhs, 2 lakhs, or whatever it is the adjudication officer at that time thinks that you should pay. And this applies not just to individuals, but this is the same attitude to first line regulators. So the stock exchanges get away with things, the clearing houses get away with things. I mean, who are we punishing? Who are we holding accountable? And you can see all of it coming together in the number of broker defaults we've had. In fact, after we moved to this online system, we thought that broker defaults were a thing of the past because we now have an investor protection fund, we have a settlement fund, we have trade guarantees. And then what the hell is happening? I mean, not one or two, there are about 12 or 15 and it continues to happen. And yet nobody is outraged. I mean, I seem to be the only person outraging about this fact that there are so many broker defaults. This is what we put behind us, right? In not in 92. 92 was when SEBI was just formed, but at least 10 years after that, at least from the beginning of this century. It's 20 years since the beginning of this century. And you have more broker defaults today? Is that what the premise of... I mean, people should just go back and listen to why the NSE was set up. You wanted a different way of trading, right? You didn't want the BSC, which was a broker's club. And then if you're going to have 12 and 15 defaults, much larger on the NSE, no questions will be asked. Nobody is, you know, concerned. Nobody in parliament.
Right. Given the work you've been doing on investor protection and given the concerns right now that the market is, you know, boiling, what do you feel needs to be done to calm the waters? I mean, SEBI has been constantly kind of saying, you know, we're watching the markets and we've got investor safety in regard. But what do you feel that they should actually do and what to avoid a kind of a situation when the markets crash, if and when, and you'll have a huge amount of losses for investors?
So, Sunita, I don't agree with something like the market is boiling, okay? So there are good companies which are doing well and they have results to show and the stock prices are moving on that basis. They are too few, okay? What is of concern is the penny stock and the small SME and MSME companies which happen to be listed and which are manipulated at will. And this, you continue to have shows on mainstream media which are handing out tips. You have blogs, you have all kinds of things going on, which are out there in the open. I have people writing in to me about hundreds of these companies all the time. In fact, there is one person who's been campaigning. I wrote about one of the issues that he took up. But, you know, if I started doing that, even if I wrote one a day, they wouldn't be enough because there are about 400 or 500 of these kind of stocks that are being manipulated. And my point is that unless somebody in the country is concerned, somebody with power, which has to be finance ministry, the finance minister, I mean, we can keep banging our heads about it, but nothing is going to change. So all that one can keep saying is that investors have to be careful. They shouldn't fall for it. But when I look at, you know, we created a Telegram group for people who got cheated by Anugraha. Okay, it was an experiment. First time we've done it. We're trying to use social media. It's been very effective because, you know, 500 people have come together. We could have some talks and seminars for them by legal experts, former SEBI people, the legal department, NSE's investor protection department. So we managed to educate them. But every time I read their comments about how they got in, it's with zero homework, 80% of them. They weren't concerned about what this brokerage is. They had done no homework. Many of them were chartered accountants. They flare up, they get angry. You know, it's just as some people blame me and say, oh, because of you, a great genius like Harshad Mehta was caught. There are these people who will say, you know, we may be chartered accountants, but don't, you are an idiot if you dare to ask us, why didn't we check? So as long as people are going to invest without doing their homework, they're going to lose money. And there's only so much one can do. I think everybody knows that, which is why you keep coming back to, well, people are greedy and they deserve to lose. I don't think that's true every time. But I think this whole gullibility about investments has to go, right? It's hard-earned money. Why aren't you a little more careful?
I think one of the issues when I mentioned boiling earlier was that there are a small number of stocks that are driving the market. And obviously, gullible investors will go after the many other stocks that are available. But let's talk about the media, because you keep on bringing it up. And it's a profession that is discredited today, and to the large part, it's seen as a vehicle to manufacture consent of the wrong kind. In your story, journalism is portrayed as it should be, according to me, a vehicle for common good. So where has the financial media gone wrong here?
Why would you talk about financial media? I think it's the rest of it, which is much worse. I mean, I've been hearing this for such a long time, and I keep saying that why talk about business media where, you know, the pressures are much more. You've been in business journalism, you know that. I mean, you know, do we have a choice about not being accountable? I remember in Times of India, every time somebody wrote a letter, and most of the time it would be big groups like the Tatas and others, it was like you were crucified until you proved yourself innocent beyond any doubt, right? We are the ones who sat and had to give out long explanations for what we did. We've moved into a time when they are now controlling the media because their advertising bucks and their sponsorship dictates. And so nothing gets published. I mean, we lived in different times. So today, I think nothing gets published until it's sort of vetted by the marketing and advertising people. I'm not in mainstream media, so I don't know what happens. But even the journalism of courage people had got cold feet, right? I mean, twice in my life, I've been out on my ass without a job, without knowing where my EMI is going to come from. And it's lucky that we are a double income, no kids family. We didn't have to worry about, you know, where the food will come from. But we were in a job which has zero job security. We come from middle class families. We took the risks. I mean, why talk about financial journalism? It's much worse politically, isn't it? And how many of them have gone and become Rajya Sabha MPs? Is it without compromising?
Right.
It is the entire media which has got to be questioned. And I feel quite angry about it because today, if there is so much of distrust, all of us idiots who are trying to do journalism, we are constantly, I mean, you're blamed if you write something, you're blamed if you don't write something. I don't even know whether people understand how, what is the process, you know, what is the fact checking, what happens when something is wrong. So when you're under pressure, you face defamation cases, you're harassed with them, you're on your own. And all that you have is this constant blame stuff that is happening. It's I blame mainstream media for this. And I blame editors for this. And who are kowtowing to politicians. That's where the biggest rot is. It wouldn't have percolated down everywhere if a few more people had spined. I mean, let me talk about one thing if you have a minute. But when Harshad Mehta was making his comeback, when he wanted a column in Times of India, I remember saying, I'm going to resign, but I went on 1 month's leave because I needed a little time to find another job. We had a HK Dua who managed to convince the Jains that it's the wrong thing to do. Go and take a look at how many editors were carrying his column. The Consumer Education and Research Center wrote to the Press Council of India. And, you know, some of these papers have defended it, saying that he was an expert. And I remember Manubhai Shah, who used to be the managing trustee of CERC, writing to them saying that, would you say then a serial killer is an expert because he knows how to murder and you will call him to write on murder? I mean, we have all failed, right?
Yeah, I think one way Harshad managed to portray himself as a risk taker from humble roots, and you know that worked to an extent. And funnily enough, that's his messaging rings somewhat true even today. You know, like a Desi believer in the India story, and you know, later he uses the nationalist card against Citibank. These themes ring true today. Sorry.
I think that was earlier. See, the Citibank stuff was earlier. In fact, Citibank is something we helped him expose, okay? Because we heard about it and, you know, now that he's not there, one can mention Devashish got documents from Gurudas Dasgupta, and that is what brought much of Citibank out. So we helped him with that. It is not Citibank. I'm more concerned with his comeback. You know, he did the same bloody thing. He didn't have a genius idea. He was again rigging up the stocks of BPL, Videocon and Sterlite. And he rigged them to a point that when there was a problem, he collapsed. They opened the BSE trading system in the middle of the night to put in trades and bail out people. I mean, what was positive or nationalist about it? If a bunch of people are wanting to be dumb and believe that this guy was a genius, that's their problem. But if you ask me, it signals how corrupt we are as a country, that we think that this is all right. Our tolerance for corruption, mischief is so high. And then we are whining and bleating about the Nirav Modi and this one and that one. Why won't they do? If Harshad was a genius, maybe some of these guys, or Vijay Mallya was a genius in extracting money from the banking system, and people should be as, you know, supportive of all of them. Why then are they getting upset about that? We should not be writing about any of those either, right? Because they looted the banking system. The way this guy was, his method was different. That's it.
One thing that hasn't changed really is the blind faith in the India story. Harshad in the early 90s was clearly a believer, and a lot of us were. I thought there was great potential. How do you see the India story today in 2020?
Hard to say. We've obviously lost our way in the last 5 or 6 years. And things that should have been with our reach, all the promises that were made, you know, haven't materialized. We have more red tape today instead of less. We have more government instead of less. So I don't know where we are headed. But sheer numbers and the fact, you know, one of the things that Devashish keeps saying is the reason why markets work is not because of government, but because there are some entrepreneurs who will keep pushing, who want to better their lot, who are coming up with new ideas, and who, because they need money to grow and get it from people, are giving them great returns. So I think in spite of it, markets sometimes do well and people do well, and the India story will keep going. It's growing in spite of the government, not necessarily because of it.
Well, it's good to end on a note of hope. Thanks a lot, Sucheta. That was, as always, a great journey to go back into some of the memories of the early 90s and, of course, your views on current stuff. And thanks for speaking to us.
You have been listening to The Signal in the Noise, with me being The Signal, of course. We would love to hear from you. Reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram on @HTSmartcast. Or you can also reach out to us personally
at Sunit Arora
and at AJ Axiom. To listen to more such interesting podcasts, do log on to htsmartcast.com. We'll be back next week with a new story and some awesome banter.
And lots of fun.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.